This is a true crime in real time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The tide of justice turned unexpectedly this week in Los Angeles. Nathan Hochman, a former federal prosecutor, unseated George Gascon as LA's district attorney, leaving the fate of one of the city's most infamous cases, the Menendez brothers' resentencing, dangling in uncertainty. Just weeks ago, Gascon made headlines with his recommendation to resentence Eric and Lyle Menendez, the brothers who, in 1989, walked into their Beverly Hills mansion and killed their parents, Jose and Kitty, with 12-gauge shotguns. Now, with Hochman's election, their path to potential freedom could face significant delays, if not outright derailment. It's a case that has captivated the public for over three decades. From sensational televised trials to viral TikTok campaigns, the Menendez brothers' story has seen endless shifts in public perception. But as December 11th approaches, the date set for their resentencing hearing, the spotlight now falls squarely on Hochman. Will he uphold Gascon's controversial recommendation? Or will he take a harder line, casting doubt on the abuse narrative that has fueled the brothers' defense? The sudden election of Hochman brings a psychological question to the forefront. How much of justice is shaped by the personalities and politics of those in power? The Menendez brothers' case, long marked by its sensational twists, now hinges on yet another pivotal player. Hochman, who has branded himself as a hard middle independent, promises to scrutinize the case thoroughly before taking a stand. But with just 9 days between his swearing-in and the scheduled resentencing, the clock is ticking. Hochman's cautious stance underscores a broader tension, the balance between ensuring justice for victims and recognizing the potential for rehabilitation. "I will review every detail," Hochman assured during a post-election interview, noting that his decision will not be rushed. Yet his comments have done little to ease the nerves of those closely watching the case, from the brothers' legal team to the victims' surviving family members. As it stands, the December 11th hearing remains on the calendar, but few believe that date will hold. Hochman has already indicated he may request more time, a move that would push the brothers' bid for parole further into the future. For Gascon, this recommendation was a culmination of his progressive reforms, a final push to reframe justice not as retribution, but as rehabilitation. Yet, for Hochman, this could be his first test, a signal to his critics and supporters alike of what kind of DA he intends to be. The Menendez brothers' story has never been simple. Their first trials in the early 90s ended in deadlocked juries, unable to reconcile the horrific details of the murders with the brothers' claims of long-standing abuse. Prosecutors argued that greed was the motive, pointing to the family's $15 million fortune. The defense painted a darker picture, one of a household terrorized by a father who was both tyrant and predator. The second trial stripped away much of the abuse testimony, culminating in convictions for first-degree murder and life sentences without parole. For nearly three decades, the Menendez brothers were little more than a footnote in true crime history. That changed when new evidence emerged in recent years supporting their claims of sexual abuse. This, coupled with the power of social media and renewed public interest, sparked a wave of advocacy. Family members once divided by the case have now, for the most part, rallied behind the brothers, urging the court to give them a chance at parole. Gascon, known for his progressive policies, seized on this momentum. His recommendation for resentencing, announced just weeks before the election, was met with both applause and outrage. He cited not only the new evidence, but also the brothers' exemplary conduct in prison. "They've paid their debt to society," Gascon argued during a press conference, emphasizing that the justice system must allow for growth and change. Hochman, however, has made it clear that he won't simply rubber stamp his predecessor's decisions. His election campaign was a repudiation of Gascon's progressive agenda, which many blame for rising crime rates. Hochman promised a return to a more traditional approach, one that prioritizes public safety and accountability. The Menendez brothers' case, already fraught with complexities, now stands as a litmus test for Hochman's leadership. As Hochman prepares to take office, the Menendez brothers find themselves in a familiar limbo. Their legal team remains cautiously optimistic, pointing out that even Huckman's most critical statements have left room for a fair review. Yet the specter of delay looms large for Eric and Lyle, who have spent more than half their lives behind bars. The prospect of further postponement is a bitter pill to swallow. This case raises profound questions about the nature of justice and redemption. If the abuse claims are true, as the new evidence suggests, then the brothers were not merely murderers, but also victims. Does their suffering mitigate their crimes? Should their decades of imprisonment, marked by good behavior and personal growth, count for something? Or does the brutal nature of their actions render such considerations irrelevant? The Menendez brothers' story is a microcosm of a larger debate about criminal justice reform. Gascon's push for resentencing was part of a broader effort to reevaluate harsh sentences, particularly for those convicted as young adolescents. Huckman's victory, however, signals a shift in public sentiment, a call for a tougher stance on crime. This ideological clash now plays out in real time, with the brothers' fate hanging in the balance. As December 11th approaches, all eyes will be on Huckman. His decision could set a precedent, not only for the Menendez brothers, but for countless others seeking a second chance. Yet for now, the waiting game continues. The next chapter in this decades-long saga remains unwritten, its outcome as uncertain as ever. The Menendez brothers' case has always been one of high drama, but now it's become a chessboard for political ideologies. On one side, you've got George Gascon, whose controversial push for resentencing was a bold statement about the potential for rehabilitation. On the other, Nathan Hochman, a DA-elect riding a wave of public demand for tougher crime policies, who's made it clear that nothing is guaranteed. What's fascinating about this case is how it forces us to confront our collective discomfort with ambiguity. The Menendez brothers are not easy figures to pin down. On the surface, they're convicted murderers who carried out an unthinkable act of violence, but peel back the layers and you find allegations of years-long abuse, psychological manipulation, and a family dynamic so toxic it would make a Greek tragedy look like a sitcom. As a society, we crave clear-cut narratives, heroes and villains, guilt and innocence. This case, however, offers none of that. Instead, it asks us to wrestle with uncomfortable questions. Can someone be both a victim and a perpetrator? Does enduring trauma justify or even explain taking a life? And perhaps most crucially, how should our justice system navigate such moral gray areas? For Nathan Huckman, this is more than just a case. It's a defining moment. His decision will not only shape the lives of Eric and Lyle Menendez, but also send a powerful message about his administration's stance on justice. Will he lean into the hardline persona he projected during the campaign, or will he allow for a nuanced approach that considers the new evidence and the brothers' conduct in prison? Then there's the role of public opinion. Thanks to the resurgence of interest driven by social media and Netflix, the Menendez brothers have gained a new generation of supporters. But should justice be swayed by the court of public opinion, or does the legal system need to hold its ground unswayed by the shifting tides of public sentiment? At the heart of it all, one question looms. Are we ready to believe in the possibility of redemption, even for those who have committed the most heinous acts? That's all for now. We'll keep digging and getting you the facts. Thanks for listening. I'm Tony Bruschi. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our updates.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.